Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 174. I'm Steve Borschen. I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Guten Morgen.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, happy geeky morning.
Phil Wilson.
Guten Morgen.
And our very special guest host, Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Buenos dias.
How are you? How are you, gentlemen?
I feel like I'm on an episode of Sprockets.
And now it does. And now it does.
It does sound that way, doesn't it?
You cheeky monkey. Punch my monkey.
That was a good bit on SNL. So, huge, you know, guys, huge. I don't know about you. Yeah, I'm going to segue into the huge.
Okay.
It literally is almost as though when I'm reading Tech Meme or browsing my RSS reader, it's like there's so much going on. How do you stay on top of it? It's unbelievable.
I sure would hate to be a tech journalist. Man, that would suck.
Yeah.
and it does.
No comment, Julio.
I tried to do a Google I/O wrap up on my blog yesterday, and it was like, this is impossible. So I narrowed it down to stuff that I could actually get my hands on and use.
I believe you termed it in your post as right frickin' now.
Right frickin' now, correct.
A technical term, to be sure.
Oh, my gosh.
But we have plenty to talk about with Google I.O. We've got stuff happening locally. I wanted to share with you guys. Okay, there's a segue. I wanted to share with you my little visit to Skillshare last week at Cocoa.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the events we were talking about last week.
Yep.
Skillshare is, I guess, a new initiative from the folks over at Cocoa using the Skillshare platform of, you know, basically teaching and reimbursing students or teachers for sharing their knowledge and that sort of thing. And there was kind of a little fair, which was an introduction at Cocoa MSP, and Don Ball played host, and we had a great time. And I spent the morning there, and I got to tell you, I walked away feeling pretty amped, not because there was necessarily anything earth-shattering as far as new announcements or new things, but you know, just learning different things about, you know, starting a business and that sort of thing. It was very interesting. So,
how many people showed up on a Saturday?
You know, I bet you there was 30 maybe.
It's tough to do a Saturday event in the summer, but
It is. But there was about, I think there was, 20 to 30. Was a good group. I mean, I had a chance to catch up with some old friends, like Meg Knodel was there, and some other friends. So, and I had a great discussion with Don. He's always very energetic, no matter what, you know, whether it's Saturday or Sunday.
Oh yeah, Tuesday. They've got a lot of initiatives going on there. That's great.
A lot of stuff going on.
Yep. So,
but if you have a chance, check out some of the Skillshare offerings that are available at Cocoa. And there's SEO. There's all sorts of different things to check
out. Well, and not only that, but one of the great things about this Skillshare adventure is if you have specific knowledge and content in your head that you can then output as a course of some kind, even if it's a multi-part course, you can be an instructor, and you can get paid for it.
Exactly. So, and use the Skillshare platform. It's really very cool.
Yeah, I think so too. Because it's, you know, just think about all the stuff that's locked up in people's heads. I mean, I've watched Peter Fleck and Toby Krins, for example, do this WordPress 101.
Yep.
And the people that go to this, they had one session. I think it was at a mini bar. There were maybe 40 people in there, and they were taking notes, and they all had their laptops, and they were setting up sites on the fly. It was pretty amazing.
Would they pay for that? That's the question.
Absolutely. Oh, I mean, if you were looking at paying somebody hundreds of dollars, perhaps, to set up a site for you, versus being able to spend, you know, $50 or $100 and learn how to do it yourself, which would you prefer to do, if you had the time?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
it was a good event, and I wish the best of luck to the folks over at Cocoa. So it'll be great.
Excellent.
That's my report, ladies and gentlemen.
So, Julio, I was so incredibly excited to hear that Apple was going to break podcasts out, and I thought, oh my gosh, we'll finally be discovered. Maybe Leo will see us. Anyway.
Now, how can you come to that conclusion? See, because I'm just playing devil's advocate here. You break us out of iTunes, you put podcasting as a separate app. Don't you have less chance of being seen?
No, I think you have more chance, but you know what? I remember when I was stunned when podcasts hit 25,000. It's now nearly 146,000 podcasts.
Now, are they all active, Steve?
And that's just Minute Maid alone.
Well, it doesn't. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't gone in and quantified what's active and what's not. You know, my Connecting the Dots podcast is up there, and I haven't done anything since 06 or 07.
Oh, that's still active. No.
Yeah, right. But what do you think of the app, Julio? Do you think it's easy for discovery?
Well, I'm of two minds about it. I think existing third-party apps like Instacast and Downcast on iOS, and even more, and that's even more the case with certain podcatchers on Android. There's a learning curve to them. They're confusing. Once you figure them out, they're very useful, but they're hard to use. And so if you're just an average person wanting to get into podcast consumption, Apple's app fills a niche very nicely because it's not the best design app in the world, but it's intuitive enough that, you know, people can pick it up and use it right away. But as somebody who is addicted to podcasts, whenever I'm washing the dishes or mowing the lawn or whatever, I'm always listening to tech podcasts.
Yeah.
I gave Apple's podcast app a whirl, and it's just too limited compared to Instacast. Instacast is my favorite. For instance, but Apple podcast app doesn't have iCloud sync, so you can't keep your podcast consumption activity, you know, synchronized across multiple devices, which blows my mind. Because
it blows my mind too. Yeah. I was just stunned they didn't do that.
Yeah. So I abandoned it fairly quickly because it's like a straitjacket. It just doesn't fit me.
Yeah. Well, what about the Apple bought Chomp. And it's an app search and discovery platform, and everyone was all excited about how that was going to roll into iTunes and the App Store searching and all of that to make that experience a lot better and also make discovery easier, so you could actually buy or download free apps easier as a consumer. Did they bake Chomp in? Do you know?
Well, I've heard some people say that they're finding podcast searches. Via Apple's App Store to be yielding better results that are not like brain dead, you know, just based on title or whatever. And so the speculation, Apple obviously won't confirm this, but the speculation is that the Chomp technology is starting to be deployed, and those searches are getting better. I just don't know if that's the case, but that based on observation, people are assuming that to be the case.
Yeah, okay. They're fiddling with the algorithm. There was a piece that just came out on TechCrunch verifying that Apple is tweaking the search algorithm. And who knows whether Chomp technology is involved yet or not, but they've just got to keep improving it. There's no doubt about that. It needs help.
Well, it's just too hard. I remember one night I sat down and I went through, I can't remember what category it was, productivity, I think, I was slicing and dicing and sorting by popular and relevance and all of that. And as I'm going through the top apps, the purchased apps, and I'm looking at most popular, and I went through about 10 screens, and I look up and it says, 100 of, like 9,300. I thought, this would take me like 20 hours to go through and look at all these apps. I mean, it's insane. Trying to find anything that will rock your world.
And Apple reportedly is working on a revamp of iTunes. And my assumption, which is something I haven't heard discussed very much, my assumption is, the Chomp technology is probably going to be baked in, fairly well into that. And the podcasting experience on iTunes on the desktop is going to be better.
Okay. Well,
so
something.
Is this app baked into iOS as one of the standard supplied from Apple apps that everyone gets when they get a new iPhone?
No, my my assumption, even with iOS 6, is that it's something. It's a goodie that you have to download.
Huh. So that also may be a problem as far as, you know, people finding podcasts. If it was a standard app, then maybe people would check it out.
Yeah, it's possible it may be a standard app, but I'm guessing no.
Huh. Okay, because iTunes is. So you might think that this might be, but, well, we'll see, I guess.
Hence my concern.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, we need to segue into Google I/O because we could spend 3 hours talking about what happened. I have to tell you that this was probably the number one developer event in terms of sheer volume of stuff that I've ever witnessed. And I would have liked to have been there to get all the goodies. When they give away everything? I mean, they gave away the tablet, the phone, the QTV thing. And what else did they give away?
I think they got a Chromebook, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. So, oh my gosh. So I have not dissected Jelly Bean, but I bet you have, Tim.
Yeah, it looks like a good update. I really like this Google Now. What do you think of that, Julio?
It seems very interesting. My concern is I don't think they've focused it and simplified it enough so that it is something that ordinary people can grok from the get-go. It's one of those things that if Apple had done it, it would be a lot easier to understand, you know, when it's first explained to you. And I'm still trying to figure it out because I don't think it's very well designed. But the basic concept is it feeds you information based on your usage history, you know, how you've used your device in the past, and also based on location. So you using those two criteria, the phone sort of intelligently feeds you information about location, weather, transportation, restaurants, and so forth. So the basic concept that the phone is looking at you, learning from you, looking around you, what's around you, all of that, if executed properly, is very interesting. But there's a card design to it, you know, where you're flipping through different cards. And I don't have a Jelly Bean device with me, but it strikes me as just a little bit awkward.
It's not the metaphor for you, huh?
I might get used to it, but it just again, I don't think Google sometimes has good ideas, but they execute them in a very nerdy, very geeky way that I don't know that it will knock, you know, average consumers off their chairs.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, and they're saying that Google Now is actually going to be available in mid-July.
Well, it's going to be part of Jelly Bean, right?
So, yeah, which has been released.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So one of the other interesting aspects is this Knowledge Graph API, which allows for this voice activation thing that's much like Siri. And I put an article in the show notes that Gene Munster over at Piper Jaffray went on the street with both an iPhone and an Android phone and tested this out, and that Android is a lot better, apparently, at doing Siri-like searches.
And he did that right here in Minneapolis.
Yep. Yeah, of course, that's interesting. He lives here.
Yeah, I saw that, yep.
So, I haven't seen that. I'll have to look at that article. Yeah, I see it in show notes.
I tweeted it. I'll get it, yeah.
So, well, maybe Google will out-Siri Apple here, which is kind of interesting.
Well, Lord knows they know how to tap into their search engine better.
And Google, Google has a lot of horsepower under the hood because it has had a number of services that rely on people, you know, talking to the service. Some of them are still available. Some of them are discontinued. There was a 411 type service at one point that no longer exists. But Google has been literally collecting all this voice input and archiving it and using it as a database from which to derive, you know, voice-related technologies of the future. And that is, I believe, will give Google at least parity, or it may allow it to leapfrog over Apple because Apple does not have that raw data.
It'll take a while.
Yep. When I looked at Google Now, and then I started to look at all the tabs in my browser, Chrome browser, of course, and thinking about all the different Google services that I use.
Nerdily spoken.
And I was
nerdily spoken.
And I was realizing that Google may come out with an app called Get Off Your Ass. And it'll be, it'll use the accelerometer in the phone that'll be like, hey, Boris, you haven't moved now for about an hour. Get off your ass. Or, you know, all these appointments and these reminders that you gave me, I haven't done any of them. Get off your ass. Because it's just, you know, the amount of information that's flowing through here both ways is pretty, pretty incredible.
Well, where does that, when does that get too creepy where it's, it knows so much about you that people really don't.
Last year.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. You
know? Last no year. Kidding.
Yeah, right.
Creepy as hell.
Well, I don't think there's no easy way to answer that because the definition of what is creepy keeps moving. A lot of things that we take for granted right now would strike, you know, people 5, 10, 20 years ago as extremely bizarre. So at some point, I don't know when, but at some point in the future, stuff like this, you know, the glass eyewear that Google is testing, all of that, you know, will seem normal. It seems very bizarre now, but it won't in the future.
No, I agree. I agree totally. Well, also the, you know, when you look at the kinds of devices, so the Nexus 7 tablet, I have to tell you that I was impressed enough. I looked at that. And I thought I'm going to buy one just cause I want to own it. I want to feel it.
Listen
and
to you,
understand
it. Disposable income. Thank goodness you don't like cocaine.
Yeah. Anymore.
I'll just go do it. What the hell?
Well, it is only a couple $100. So it's not.
Well,
not
that's really why, but it's because I really want to play with it and understand it. And what I've been interested to see is stuff like the Vizio tablet, you know, for $183 at Costco and the Galaxy Tab is now under $200, and you know there's enough of these that are flowing out that the tablet space is getting really interesting. What did you guys think of the Nexus 7?
It's going to kill the Kindle Fire.
And why?
Because it's a lot better, no compromises, full on Android.
You don't have to hack it to get to
the I can download the Amazon app and get all my Kindle books if I want. I can run the Nook app. You know, there's no compromises and it's better hardware. So it's the same price.
And they're subsidizing it. Google is subsidizing it. They're selling it below cost.
Amazon did the same thing with the Fire.
Yeah.
Sure. This is better.
And what provider hasn't done that with some of their mobile offerings? The subsidies are just we do business here.
But they're subsidizing it more than, you know, I mean, they're delivering a device there that's worth a lot more than $199. So, yeah, they're buying users.
Yep. Well, I'll put this in the show notes, but BGR had an article about Amazon prepping two new Kindle Fire tablets with improved build and metal casings.
Yeah, they're going to really need to. I think they're going to need to drop the price again. You know, I think it's going to need to be like $169 or $149, something like that, to compete with the Nexus 7.
Well, yep. Unless they make it a full-on Android tablet, the next iteration of Amazon's.
Yeah, no, I don't see as there's any way that they're going to do that. I mean, they've their whole value proposition is to have a radically different user experience than Android.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm absolutely not discounting Amazon for several reasons. Number one, it has it's built an ecosystem of information, much of which people already have and want to use on a regular basis. Google at this point does not, and Amazon is so well known, and Amazon also has a history of steadily knocks down the prices of its devices. I mean, the Kindles are under $100 now. Apple resists doing that. It tries to keep prices exactly where they are, model after model. Amazon, on the other hand, continually lowers the prices on its devices and may have a greater incentive to do that now. And so Amazon, I think, is not to be underestimated. And Google has a disadvantage because people face a choice. They can either get a full-featured tablet, and if they want a full-featured tablet, they're likely to go the iPad. Another set of people want just a very simplified device for information consumption. That's the Kindle Fire. The new Google tablet exists in this very uncertain, very hazy middle ground, and that puts it at a disadvantage. So,
have they sent you a review unit yet, Julio?
No, I'm hoping to get one soon, though.
Okay, because I'd be interested in your opinion after you've had a chance to work with it a little bit, because all the reviews I've read say that it's, you know, it's like the iPad in build quality and performance and whatnot. And, you know, at $200, a lot of people are going to pick this thing up.
A lot of geeky
Steve things. Borsch is going to be at the head of the line.
That's yeah, right.
Exactly. You bet.
Steve Borsch and Leo Laporte.
And some say separated at birth, but so we talked a little bit about Jelly Bean. We talked a little bit about the tablet, but before we talk any more about it, I think we really ought to just bring in a little guest from Google I/O, and Brian Nagy is there, getting up very early to join us this morning. So let's go ahead and bring Brian in. Brian is a longtime tech community participant here in Minnesota. I had a chance to meet Brian years ago, through Justin Grammons and all the work that we've done in mobile, and Brian has done great stuff for us at Mobile March. He's now a product manager at Code 42 Software and also a rabid Android fan. So, Brian, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, what time is it? It's like what, 6:30?
6:30, yeah.
So. Yes, it is 6:30 in the morning.
Good morning, sunshine.
But the reason this works is, this is Steve Borsch, Brian. The reason this works is because geeks and nerds actually go to sleep.
You know? Yeah, you'd like to think that, but Google has plenty of things planned after hours. Really?
Okay, all right.
So just before we go any further, what did you do last night? I mean, there was a big party Wednesday night, I know that. So what did you do last night?
Last night, I went to Ignite. They had a special Ignite presentation here, and then... they had a pitch week or pitch night, like for startup weekend. Only instead of doing it over the entire weekend, they did it all in one night. So pitch, teams, brainstorm, and then complete a project in one night, 3 hours.
Oh wow.
Well, listen, before we brought you on, we kind of touched a little bit on Jelly Bean. We talked a little bit about the tablet. So kind of let's reset. Obviously, a guy who's at Google I/O, a developer guy who's at I/O, who's now sporting a lot of free swag just for being there. What are your thoughts on Jelly Bean and also the tablet real quick? And then we can kind of talk about some more of the more sort of the toys aspect of Google I/O.
Sure. Jelly Bean, I mean, it's Android 4.1 for a reason. It's not Android 5. It's not Android 6. It's building on the success of Ice Cream Sandwich. And there are a lot of great new features, but it's not earth-shattering. I think one of the best new features that I've seen so far is Google Now.
Yep.
Which is...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You talked about that?
Yeah, how does just that briefly, actually work when you do a voice search or when you're just walking around? How's the information presented to you?
Well, Google Now is kind of like have you ever used iGoogle in your browser?
Yep.
It's kind of the same thing where you go to a single landing page and you have all of your daily information there. You have your transit to work, to and from work. You have the weather, sports, all that other information, whatever you want to put there will show up there. So it's more of a landing page than anything. And it's pretty useful, the weather. You know, I opened up, the weather's there, so I know what it's like going to be like out for the day.
Is there an amount of sort of setup for now, or is it full-on intuitive? I mean, like iGoogle, you have to go in and basically, you know, set up your parameters and put your widgets on your desktop. Do you have to do the same thing in Now, or is it very intuitive?
Yes and no. They give you, I don't know, 10 cards, widgets, right off the bat, and you can choose to view them or not in the settings, turn them on or off. I disabled sports, not a big sports fan, so that card never shows up. But it's pretty limited, so there's I don't see an API for it, so there's no way for developers to create new cards to show. You get the handful that they give you, and that's it. So I see this being a feature that'll be important down the road, but right now
it's just kind of a placeholder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You just get weather and sports and stuff.
So the card interface sounds a lot like WebOS. Is Android becoming more like WebOS in the UI?
No, not really. There's some similarities. We actually saw this in Ice Cream Sandwich when they released Chrome Beta. Your tabs on a phone, the Chrome tabs are these cards, and you can kind of go into this card mode and kind of swipe them away, the ones you don't want, or expand. If you have 10 tabs open, you can kind of pinch to expand them to see what's behind the other cards. So yeah, there are some aspects of it. The swipe to delete notifications and swipe to when you have your recent applications open, swipe to shut those off. So they're getting more into the gesture side of things because it is a buttonless device, or most of the devices are now becoming buttonless. So they need to use other interactions to do the normal day-to-day stuff.
Well, so Google also introduced a $299 streaming media player, the Nexus Q.
Ah, the geeky toy thingy, yeah.
Well, so
Woody Allen fans, does this seem like a sort of like a
Orgasmatron? Yeah. There you go. Too bad it's not, right, Phil? Yeah. Anyway.
I don't know if you guys are Doctor Who fans, but the first word out of my mouth when I saw it was ood. Look it up.
Yeah.
Look it up.
Okay.
Now that has to be the geekiest pop culture reference we've ever had on the show.
That's right. but when I saw the Nexus Q, I thought, oh, that's really awesome. In terms of how it looked and how it was machined and so forth. But it doesn't do much more than a $99 Apple TV yet. B, I heard there was a lot of negative buzz. So not only no API in Google Now, but there isn't one for the Nexus Q. Did you find that to be kind of off-putting?
Well, I talked to several folks, several of the Googlers there about the Q, and said, well, you guys touted this as an Android computer. They said that several times. This is an Android computer. It runs some sort of version of Android 4.0, and it doesn't have a direct API or development kit to build anything off of. And it's a glorified, as of right now, DLNA media receiver that you can get for, like you mentioned, $100. You can get tons of different media receivers to broadcast your stuff.
And you can't use it standalone, right? You have to have an Android device.
That's correct. So it's in good and bad. So the good thing is that you don't actually stream content from your device to the unit. You tell the unit what to play, and it goes and gets the content from the internet on its own. So you're not using your data plan. You're not relying on your phone to be on until you want to change the song or movie or whatever. So that's kind of a good and a bad. What they've said a lot of times, or a lot of the Googlers said, well, there's also a micro USB port. So, if you want to hack on it, you can. And several Googlers told me that. And so they want the community, the rabid nerds that are here, to root it and hack it and mod it and put the real Android on it versus this pared down version of Android that they have. So that way it can be used for a full on Android PC capabilities.
So they're getting ready. So it's a matter of just getting it out there and, getting people to look at it and understand it, as opposed to having it be a finished product ready to ship in volume.
Yeah. It's interesting because they've already put it up for pre-order and it ships in a couple weeks. And I'm surprised that they're kind of using this community engagement to drive the development of the unit versus let's get it out there. It'll ship in Q4 and we'll see what everybody does with it. And then, redo the software then. But right now they're shipping it in a couple of weeks, but it doesn't do a whole lot. So it's got an amplifier in it so you can hook speakers directly to it, but that's about it.
So, Brian, we've talked a little bit about a couple of things from Google I.O. and short of the tablet, I guess, or the Asus 7, or the Nexus 7 by Asus, it seems like a lot of this stuff is not really for real people, which is okay. I mean, it is a developer conference, but they're rolling out all this stuff that's really not ready for prime time. It just doesn't seem like it. They seem like a lot of engineering toys, and you know, we haven't even talked about Project Glass yet. So, you know, is this really, are we expecting too much out of a developer conference?
Well, I think Google does more with this development conference than others do with theirs. No dig on Apple, but they have a very closed door. They don't stream a lot of stuff. Everybody's under NDA when they go to WWDC. And there's the sessions don't ever, they don't get online until way later if they even get online at all. With I.O., most of the sessions, or a lot of the popular sessions, are streamed live. There's all sorts of press and hype about the new features. Even features that aren't released yet, or even features or products that are going to be released for a long time. So it's, we talked a little bit about this over dinner, is that this is the ultimate marketing event for Google. Yes, it's a developer conference. Yes, the toys that you get are going to be for development. The sessions are very development heavy. If you go to the sessions expecting to get some more marketing speak, you're out of luck. It's all code on the screen.
Okay. So, well, let's talk about real quick. Let's talk about Glass. Obviously, no expense spared in the demo of Glass at Google I.O.
Oh.
How did they get the approvals to do all that stuff?
Well, if you watch the day two keynote, they talked about how they did the day one. Sergey was on the screen, and they basically redid the entire stunt. I have a feeling that they paid for two jumps, and so that they were going to get their money's worth.
But in case it didn't work the first day?
Yeah, maybe that, or maybe it was just, I don't know. But anyway, so he explained how they did it. He explained that they had to talk to Oakland and San Jose and City of San Francisco and all these other people to get this thing working, and how they actually beamed Wi-Fi using like three or four different technologies. They were actually targeting the jumper directly with these dishes to make sure that they had connectivity. It was just amazing.
Is it me, or does everybody? Is it just me, or are we realizing now that that Breon is on a
hotel Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
You're breaking.
You're breaking up a little bit, Breon. So. We'll try to edit you in post.
Okay. Yeah. I'm actually using my 4G hotspot, so the hotel Wi-Fi is even worse.
Okay. Good deal. Well, go. I'm sorry. So go on. You were talking a little bit more about that.
Yeah. They really did a lot for Google Glass, and I don't know that it necessarily promoted the device more than anything, because there were so many other underlying technologies that made that jump possible, But yeah, I mean, Google Glass is pretty neat, and I signed up to get my pair for $1,500. We'll see if I get accepted.
Are you really gonna spend $1,500 on it?
Yeah, because I think it's an opportunity they've made it very clear that these glasses are not for consumer use. One, they priced it at $1,500. Two, you had to fill out this form, of course, agree to a bunch of terms of service and stuff. You had to fill out this form that says, are you going to use this for consumer use, or are you going to use this for business and development use? And so, of course, I checked the business development box. But this is an opportunity for, you know, a couple thousand people that are technology and not just enthusiasts, but on the bleeding edge, to be able to help shape what Google Glass is. So, yeah, I got my set, and as soon as I get them, I'm going to start trying to gather up a bunch of people to start developing some awesome stuff.
So, but you're a glasses wearer. How are you going to wear a Google Glass on top, you know, with your glasses?
Yeah, the day I get accepted is the day that I go get contacts.
So this is going to be an expensive little proposition for you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, can't you just wear it on top of glasses?
Unless he gets the boss to pay.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things when I was watching the day one keynote, and they did all this stuff, is they didn't show anything of the heads up, you know, user interface at all.
Yeah, really. It basically was like a camera clipped to the.
It's like a really expensive head mounted camera. Did they show anything when you were there? Did you get the chance to put, you know, one of these on to check it out, or?
Very protective about putting them on. I think most of them were real. They were actually functional. I think there were a few that weren't. But they would not let anyone try them on. At one of the after parties, they said, "Oh, so and so is going to be here with this Google Glass on, but don't ask him to put it on because he will not let you." Huh. And that was directly from people at Google.
Well, I noticed in the jump video, I mean, of the jumpers, they were also wearing, you know, cameras on their chests. So I was just kind of curious as to, you know, how much of that was really Google Glass and how much of it was, you know, their pro. What are those cameras?
The GoPro, yeah.
Yeah, the GoPro camera.
Well, you could almost tell because when they were using the glass eyepieces, the video was somewhat subpar and a little shaky. And then occasionally they'd switch the, you know, high resolution cameras that I assume were in the airship. Yeah. And I get a little fuzzier when these guys are in the air because there's this great video of, you know, the guys actually looking at each other, you know, bouncing from viewpoint to viewpoint as they're, you know, heading down in their air suits and so forth. And I have the sneaking suspicion there were some cameras in there that were not glass ones because the quality tended to fluctuate. I don't know that for a fact.
Well, you know, it still was a very stunning, I got to tell you, it was a very, very stunning demo. It was quite the circus.
Yeah, there's no way in hell you're going to ever see Apple do anything like that.
Nope.
Exactly.
I mean, there's so many opportunities for failure there. It was just crazy, but it did work. That's what made it exciting, I think.
Well, it made it exciting, and it was also impressive that they'd take that kind of a risk. I mean, a company that size, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's got people talking about them, that's for sure. Yeah.
That is for sure. So, Brian, what haven't we seen? What little tidbits can you share with us as far as some of the stuff that's not getting a lot of press?
Well, being a developer, you know, all the stuff that you got in press are things that are going to be the users are going to see directly, immediately, right away, and understand what they mean and be able to touch it and feel it and use it. What we haven't seen a lot of press on, unless you've been watching the live sessions, is the amount of time and effort they put into the back end of Android, for one. They've redone a lot of the way that it handles showing things on the screen, so that way it looks a lot better and is less jittery. I mean, that's always been a downfall of Android, is you swipe the screen, there's this jitter that happens every so often. So they had this internal project called Project Butter, where they wanted to make it just smooth like butter. And they did a lot of work. There was a lot of sessions. Every single Android session said, "Oh, yeah, and then in Butter we did this." So there's a lot of underlying stuff that they worked on, a lot of developer tools for Android to make it easier to develop. One of them also was international support, internationalization, where you can click on your view in the developer kit and say, okay, show me all the different languages for this view. It spits out every language that you've put into the device, a screenshot of it, so that way you can see how the words fit in the buttons and in the headers and in the different areas. So if one word gets translated and it breaks a button into two lines, you can then go edit the file that has the strings in it for that button and make it one line again so it doesn't look weird. So they put a lot into the developer toolkits.
Well, go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, what about Chrome OS and Chromebooks? I know they spent some time on day two with that. Do you see that catching on, or is it still going to be sort of a for enterprise only kind of boring sort of offering?
Yeah, I'm not sure how it's going to catch on. They did announce that they're going to be selling Chromebooks at Best Buy and I think in some retailers in the UK. So they'll actually be able. People will be able to go see them live and touch them and understand what it means to be a Chromebook. They've also revamped the Chromebooks to be less singular browser based and more like a desktop. So there is a desktop and you can have multiple windows open. There's a little application bar at the bottom like you'd have in Mac or Windows. So I mean, I think since they've launched Chrome OS, they've really taken the feedback in and actually acted upon it versus just continuing down the path that they wanted to go down. So I don't know that I'll see it catching on, But if they can sell a Chromebook for $200 in the future that is just as performant as a regular laptop, maybe not with all the Photoshops and other apps of the world, but opens the web page and you can do photo editing fairly smoothly and does have a lot of great web apps, I think it'll be great for emerging countries and for colleges and students.
I'm currently testing the latest Chromebook, and I also have the Chromebox, which is a desktop computer, and I like the new paradigm that has, you know, the multiple windows. You're not just kind of locked into a browser window. I think it's a beautiful. It's hard to believe that I'm saying this about a Google product, but it's just beautiful looking. I'm pretty excited about it. Obviously, I'm a big Google head and kind of a nerd, and these devices still have limited appeal. And Google is obviously building for the future, not the present. But if it keeps plugging away on this, I definitely see a niche market for these devices. They're already becoming very popular in K-12 schools.
The other thing that supports the Chromebox and the laptops is the amount that they're putting into the rest of their cloud products. So none of these Chromebooks work without the products that they've built, and they've added a lot of offline support to Google Docs, and they're adding more. Mm-hmm. And they're extending their SDKs and development kits to other developers, like the Chrome Drive. SDK is, version 2 just came out. It's only been 10 weeks, and they already have version 2 of the SDK, which allows a lot more integration and offline access and bundling of resources, so that way you can do this offline thing with your app. So, again, it's all about the cloud, but now they're also offering the ability to use Drive as your offline host.
Well, that's interesting.
Well, so one of the things, what I wanted to just to toss out here real quick was because of what we all know about the ability for people to build their apps on Amazon Web Services, to see Google come out with their compute engine, even in its infant stage here, is a pretty exciting development, because I got to tell you that there's no company that I would look at from an infrastructure standpoint on a global basis that I would be more interested in than Google themselves. And did you have that same kind of reaction, or kind of what was the general feel about having this new infrastructure available?
Well, I think, you know, they've been doing cloud computing from a developer standpoint for a little bit with App Engine. And this really allows the developer to be able to host the app, and then as well as spin up their private servers without having to use Amazon in conjunction with App Engine, in conjunction with this other tool. So they're really bringing, giving the developers all the tools in the toolbox versus just the hammer. So it's a well-needed product that they released, and they didn't mention anything about pricing, so that may deter people, because Amazon's been around for a while. They've been able to amortize their costs, and they really haven't nailed down. But it's Google, so it's not like this is some random cloud company that's coming online saying, "Oh, we have virtual private servers for a great price." You know, I believe that it's good. They're going to undercut Amazon, and certainly they're going to have the computational power to beat Amazon, but. What they did with App Engine was kind of sucked, because they took away the allocation for what a free app was. They pared it back so much that people were just kind of dropping left and right. They'd spin up an EC2 instance to do the computing, and then they'd shut it down when they were done with it. So we'll see if it's priced competitively or not. They say it is.
That's was there any hallway discussion about Google TV? Is that dead, or are they working on it?
They had a whole booth dedicated to Google TV on the second floor, and they had sessions about Google TV. I didn't actually attend any of them, but there was another talk of it. It wasn't in any keynotes, Other than the showing off the new units from like Sony and Vizio, there wasn't really. I mean, Sony and Vizio did make announcements the past couple of weeks about their new Google TVs. There really wasn't any talk about it. So I don't know if this Nexus Q is their next best or their next bet, and they're going to cannibalize their own Google TV market, or if they're going to combine the product lines in the future. I don't know. There wasn't a lot of talk.
So when lots of announcements and press conferences in the last month, and I know you keep tabs on all of them. When you get together at events like this, do you guys all sit around and kind of just talk about what those events mean overall and what those announcements mean, and how does what's happening at Google I/O sort of rank among all of them?
Well, you start putting the pieces together when you attend the official announcement event. The internet has so many rumors now. Most of the headlines for blogs are, "Oh, Google's going to release this?" question mark. And so you never really get the sense that it's real or not. But when you can come to an event like this and tie in those pieces, and even if they don't announce one of the rumors that came out, it now gives it more weight for the next announcement that they, oh yeah, so since they announced this, they're probably really going to announce this, and it helps you put it together. And yeah, you talk about a little bit every time we were in line for a session or a keynote. I'm here with Ivan Stejic and Lloyd Kledwin from Minneapolis as well. And every time we're standing in line, it's, oh, what are they going to announce now? What are they going to do today? And, you know, we would be placing bets. Oh, it's going to be Google TV, and we're going to take home a new Sony unit, and blah blah blah. So there is a lot of speculation. We talk a lot about what we think is going to be announced, and then they just blow us away with Skydivers.
Breon, this is Graham. I'm curious. Did you go out there primarily for your own interests, or did you go out there to learn stuff for Code 42?
Yeah, in my previous role at Code 42, I was the engineering liaison, which I would work with internal teams on product stuff, and then work with external partners to make sure that our developers had what they needed to do their job. So they thought that was a natural fit, and I thought it was a natural fit to send me out here instead of sending five developers. It's impossible to get tickets and spend all that money to send five developers out. I would come out, glean the information I thought was important, make some contacts, shake some hands for the Google developer advocates, and just kind of bring back the experience the best I can.
Yeah.
Also, Google, actually, they have Google developer groups, previously known as Google Technology User Groups, and I'm one of the managers, so they actually paid for me to come out here to go to the Google Manager Summit. So they paid for my hotel and airfare.
Cool.
And so all we had to do was buy the Google I/O ticket, and we were all set. So from a company standpoint, they're like, well, yeah, of course we're going to send you. We only have to pay the price.
Sure.
To get in.
Sure. Did you happen to meet Don Dodge, developer advocate?
I haven't yet. You know, his name came up about six times this weekend. Yeah. I've never heard of him until this weekend, but yeah.
As in, where the hell is he or what?
He's a good guy.
Yeah, there's one more day. It's kind of a half day today. So I think I'm going to skip out on sessions and try to meet more people and pass out business cards and whatnot.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Take your Google goggles out and find out what's going on.
Yeah.
Listen, yeah. Breon, thanks very much. I appreciate you spending a little time getting up early for us. Go back to sleep, get a little rest, and then hit the day, okay?
Will do.
Thanks, Breon. Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Thanks. Guys.
Hey, before we move on, I'd like to ask Julio a question.
Sure.
You did a post yesterday on your blog and with a kind of a wraparound.
Are you there?
I'm still here.
Oh, Tim. Sounds like we lost Tim.
Tim just disappeared.
He went boop, and he was gone.
He must have been fiddling with his Google glasses. No,
Steve, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, well, let's see.
I'll call him back.
Yeah.
Hello. Okay. Sorry.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
I don't know where I was in the question when I got cut off.
You went boop, Just you were saying that
I was gonna
Julio
ask
had Julio, written a blog yesterday, and
right. So Julio, on your blog post with all the Google I/O stuff, one of the items we didn't talk about is the iOS version of Chrome. So mm-hmm. can you talk a little bit about how that is on the iPad and the iPhone, and if you're going to use that in place of mobile Safari or not?
Yeah, I am. I've relegated Safari to a not used apps folder and switched to Safari mainly because I use Chrome. I use Chrome on all my other devices. You know, Chrome obviously is in Chrome OS, Chrome in Android, Chrome Mac, PC, and so it makes sense for me to use Chrome because then all my tabs, my open tabs sync across devices, my bookmarks sync across devices. Extremely, extremely handy. I also like the design of the iOS Chrome browser. It's very elegantly executed with some very interesting design touches. The disadvantage is since Apple gives its own Safari browser a bit of an advantage, third-party browsers because they're using slightly outdated technology. Tend to be slower, and also you can't make it the default browser. So if you hit a web link, it's going to go right to Safari. You know, that being said, given how I just to give you a little background, I'm sort of getting deeper and deep, slow, gradually getting deeper and deeper in the Google pool. I'm adopting Google-based services more and more. Like, for instance, I've made my Google Voice my primary phone number now for work. And so given how googly I am, it just makes sense for me to use the Chrome browser. And I just like the way they designed it. It's very, very nicely done.
So it automatically syncs your desktop experience with your mobile experience?
Yes, yes. Very.
Well, not only that, but also your back history. So if you have looked at 10 sites, say you're doing research on something, you can actually transfers and syncs the back history, so you can hit the back button in the Chrome iOS browser and go back. And just to, I'll put a link in the show notes to something here, Julio, but it was an Onintech, just a down and dirty article. This guy was actually at Google I/O and he ran some tests. And so it turns out that the thing that Apple limits that they can take advantage of is the JavaScript engine, their super fast JavaScript engine. And they provide a WebKit API to something called UI WebView, which is essentially a browser you can build into your app. And it turns out that Opera, they actually render stuff on their servers before they send it to the iOS device, and then they send it as a page. And then there's another browser too that does the same sort of thing, and that's the way that they kind of get around it and make it a faster experience.
They've described a Chrome for iOS as basically just a WebKit wrapper, which is pretty much the case. And you are going to take a performance hit, but I'm sort of balancing, performance hit versus, you know, a delightful design and access to the information I have on other devices.
Yeah, bingo.
And the latter categories win hands down.
Yeah.
Do you see Apple doing something like this in the future?
Doing what?
With Safari, doing, you know, unifying the experience so your tabs in Safari would sync with your iPad?
I'm sure they would, but the problem with Apple is whenever they unveil a very handy service like that, it's only on Apple devices. So the reason I'm moving towards Chrome and away from Safari, even though the version in Mountain Lion is very nice, is because it's universal. I mean, every single device, any kind of computing device I'm on now has Chrome on it, and that's just absolutely killer.
Well, I'm right with you on the same way.
So it's no wonder that they have so many people using Chrome browser, 310 million active users.
And the Chrome browser for iOS, I think, just hit number one in the App Store.
Yeah.
So, Steve, have you changed your browser on your?
Well, I've been on Chrome for a long time.
On your iOS device?
Oh, I just downloaded it and just started doing it. And so I'm not totally, I haven't synced it yet. Well, mainly because I use LastPass, so I've got a I've got to set everything up, and I've got to use two-step verification, so I've got to give it an application-specific password and all this kind of crap. So I haven't really dove into it too much yet. And I know you're like, what? What's he talking about?
Steve's a very careful person.
He's a very careful person. That's the way to put it, yes.
Yeah. Well, after my daughter had her laptop stolen and the potential exposure that she could have been experiencing but didn't, thank God, it sort of put the fear of God into me.
Well, speaking of her, did she make it back from Mexico?
She did.
Alive and well. That's good.
Well, not only that, but did she love Mexico? She loved the people, and she goes, I want to go back. I want to go back right away. It's like, well, okay, just stay home for a while.
So there.
Well, what else is going on? Anything coming up here in the next month or two from an event standpoint?
Well, can we just mention one thing before we go into events real quick?
Oh, sure.
Sure.
Was the holy crap of RIM, their Q1 miss, the first loss in 8 years. Yeah. BlackBerry 10 launch was delayed, 5,000 jobs cut, and they lost, I don't know, it was what, 1.8 billion?
Looks like Microsoft is looking to pick up some assets from them too. So that would be an interesting
fire sale.
Yep. Interesting sort of thing. But yeah, I don't see really much of a future for them.
Yeah.
No.
They're dead. They joined the Death Watch. They're very close.
Join the Death Watch? God, they've been on Death Watch forever.
Yeah, but I mean, they're another one on the Death Watch of many right now. Yeah.
So Julio, you're going to have to sell your BlackBerry.
Oh, yeah. No, it's telling that whenever I write a column or a story that, touches on multiple mobile phone platforms, and I give recommendations on what to do on this platform, what to do on that platform. I've just gotten to the point where I don't even bother with BlackBerry, and I've received zero complaints from readers. No one has complained.
Yeah.
Well, when was the last time you did a review on a BlackBerry phone, Julio?
It's been
it's been a long time. I imagine.
It's been a couple of years. Yeah. The design of the design of the phones that they are planning to roll out, and planning is the operative word here because they might just go under imminently. The design of that one handset that's just a touch screen with the metal top and bottom, beautiful looking device, and I would love to get my hands on that, but I doubt I ever will.
Sounds like a Lumia 900.
Yeah.
Well, I've gone into my personal blog, and I've been fixing images that are broken. And it's a long story, but it's from the original TypePad shift over, and then I made a change and screwed up my database. So now I have to do everything manually to put all these images back. But anyway, in February of 2007, I was driving back from Florida with my daughter, and I did a post called iChat at 75 miles an hour. And I got to tell you, when I think back on that, it was a Trio 750 hooked up to the Verizon network. We're on the interstate, and I'm iChatting with my wife from my laptop, which is tethered to the Trio. And I remember how unbelievably difficult it was. Now, here we are, not even 5 years later, and people are Ustreaming events and the kinds of things that we're able to do with mobile networks really is unbelievable when you really think about it. And then, this Google what was it called?
Google Now.
Thanks.
Google Now.
Google On.
But when you think about that, and you think about Hangouts and being able to do that, and just the ubiquity of all the technologies that have sort of come together in such an unbelievably short period of time, it really is hard sometimes to stand back and appreciate how far we've come in such a short period of time.
Well, when you said 5 years, Steve, 5 years ago today, the first iPhone went on sale.
Oh, God, you're right. Yep. You're right. Yeah. Wasn't it the 27th?
You were there.
Wasn't it the 27th?
Well, I read where it was.
I can't remember.
5 years ago today, but that post could have been written yesterday. I don't know.
So as I recall, that was like $399 when it came out. Something like that.
Yeah, that rings a bell. Yep.
Huh.
I didn't have to pay for my first one, but so I don't remember. But I was there. I got mine right away.
So Julio, what do you what's hot on your radar screen? I know you did that the Skype the Comcast TV based Skype and versus the Tele HD. Any other big hot things that you got coming up?
Well, my column for this Sunday is about just the general topic of podcasting. I've been wanting to do that for a while, and Apple gave me a handy excuse with its podcast app. But then I extrapolated and gave my recommendations on what to use on different platforms. I made a couple of very interesting discoveries on the Minovate homepage, so thank you very much for that. And after that, I'm planning to review the Chromebook and the Chromebox for possibly for the following Sunday. And so I've been putzing around with those, and it's just an interesting set of extremes. You know, the Retina MacBook Pro on one end as the souped up, you know, fancy computer, and on the complete opposite extreme, you know, this very stripped down, very minimalist, very inexpensive Google laptop. It's striking how different, you know, these two approaches are. But I'm excited about both, and I think they both have a future.
Cool. Good. We'll look forward to that article. Mm-hmm. And then how about events? We got the Techmasters thing, but also there's this crowdfunding using digital media to directly access capital on the Tuesday, July 17th down at Coco. I'm assuming this is going to be about Kickstarter and other kinds of crowdfunding opportunities.
Indiegogo is another one. Yeah, this is at least the third one of those that DealPen has done. I've attended a couple of them, actually. So okay. It's a good overview of what it's all about. And he gets pretty good attendance at those things.
Great. I think that's about it, guys.
Oh, wait a minute. You didn't say anything about Google Plus. Okay, we just said something about Google Plus. Moving on.
The ghost.
That's right.
Well, and Steve, the other event coming up is the Data Venue event, which is now right. The site is live. It's taking registrations. The agenda is still being filled in, but that's going to be a biggie with some good national players in attendance and speaking August 7 and 8 at Carlson School.
Fantastic.
All right. Sounds great. Well, an action-packed event. Thanks for joining us, Julio.
No problem.
Absolutely.
It's always good to hear from you. Take care of yourself. Have fun geeking out with the Apple and the Google and all the fun you're going to have for the rest of the week.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, listen, that's it for another podcast. We'll see you next week on
the Minovate Gang Podcast. Adios. Take care, everybody.
Hey, guys.
See ya.
Mañana.